Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Going to have Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst, drop by at 9:30. We'll look ahead at the matchup tonight for the Predators taking on the Detroit Red Wings before they come back home this weekend. Predators ending the season series tonight against Detroit. Puck drop at 6:30, pregame at 5:30. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But right now, talking Tennessee Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we spent a lot of time talking about Mike Vrabel and the defensive coordinator position with Shane Bowen this week, but some Titans fans still not over the departure of the former defensive coordinator in Dean Pease. And we played a clip right after it happened, from Darren Donovan Chase, former Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard, joining the show and just kind of highlighting what he saw from Vrabel and from Dean Pease and that dynamic of those two working together as Dean Pease's tenure in Tennessee came to an end. Here's what former Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard had to say on Darren Donovan Chase a few weeks ago about that dynamic between Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease.
Vrabel wanted to be the guy that was calling the defensive plays, and Coach Pease was very well at proving himself. He's already proved himself. He's already been through this. So when it comes to why should I loosen up my play calling ability just so you can make play calls? Like, I'm going to be a great defensive coordinator no matter what. I don't need you stepping on my toes. And you could kind of see a little bit of that head, those heads bumping during the games last year, and well, 2 years ago, I should say. And you could kind of see that uncomfortableness, you know, with Coach Pease. And it was a shock to everybody because Coach Pease, he coached Vrabel. So you automatically think that, all right, you brought me out of retirement. I'm going to retire with you on top. We're going to go win some Super Bowls. We're going to be the most dominant defense we can, and I'm going to sell off into the sunset and enjoy my retirement. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
So that was former Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard on with Darren Donovan Chase a few weeks ago. And, Joe, we spent a lot of time the next day talking about that. That got a rise out of Titans fans, and it called into question Mike Vrabel. Is he being too much of a control freak? Is he really overruling his defensive coordinator and Dean Pease at the time? And we had a lot of conversation. Now, I remember kind of sifting through all that and saying, all right, like, why would Mike Vrabel, after Dean Pease called the game that he called against Baltimore, just say, all right, good job, but this is going to be my show here in the AFC title game against Kansas City? That part of it never made any sense to me. But regardless, that was a lot of reaction on social media to that from Wesley Woodyard a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and, you know, look, the information I've gotten on that, the only thing I've gotten other than, I'm sure at some point, Vrabel in his headset was like, what are we going to do to stop Patrick Mahomes during the game? But going into the week, the only thing that I've been able to gather is, like, Vrabel put in some different cover three that, like some, you know, adjusted cover three, you know, which I would assume happens a lot, doesn't it? Wouldn't you think? Like that he would weigh in and say, hey, let's try this, let's try that. But nothing that suggests that he just, like, took over for – like you said, it makes no sense at all. Now, during the game, heat of the moment, okay, I could see that. You know, conversations, arguments, I'm going to call this series, whatever. I mean, but that's not what Woodyard was talking about.
Right.
So, again, I said it earlier in the show, someone needs to, like, figure out more about this probably because it's interesting and it's kind of hanging out there. But I don't think that it was just a complete takeover at all.
Well, and then, you know, the conversation gets enhanced again yesterday with Arthur Smith, former Titans offensive coordinator, now head coach with the Atlanta Falcons, hopping on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, talking about Dean Pease coming into his staff and how he went about acquiring Dean Pease on his staff. Here's what former Titans offensive coordinator and current head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Arthur Smith, had to say yesterday on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast.
Oh, Dean Pease was retired. He's kind of sniped from us, too.
I read an article that says you brought Dean Pease out of retirement. This is for the second time because he was retired.
He was retired and retired from the tie-ins.
He's like the retired. Brett Favre of NFL
coaches.
He's retiring and coming back.
Yeah.
How'd you get Dean back?
You One phone call?
No, he reached out to me.
And then,
he reached out to you?
Yeah.
I like that. Okay,
said,
keep going.
He said retirement's not for me. And so when I started going through the interviews, before I went on the interviews, I called him up and said, hey, you, this is what you really want to do? He said, yeah, absolutely. So it was nice because that is a – if you're going to be a first-time head coach and going to call plays, you need somebody experienced on that side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So that was a huge hire for us.
Dude, how great is he, man?
Oh, he's best. Yeah, no, I feel really fortunate. Because it alleviates a lot of headaches you're going to have early on. There's so much trust that he's got things covered on that side of the ball. And we meet every day or where we go over stuff, but Dean's the best. Like, you don't feel like you have to micromanage anything that's going on over there.
So that was former Titans offensive coordinator, current head coach of the Falcons, Arthur Smith, talking about Dean Pease. And obviously, Joe, I mean, that jumps out to you a little bit, saying that Pease called him and that he wanted to be back in the NFL as a defensive coordinator. Retirement was not for him. And look, it's obvious why Arthur Smith would want Dean Pease to be a part of the fold. I mean, he highlighted it there in his answer. That really alleviates a lot of headaches and a lot of pressure on that side of the ball. You're very aware that Dean Pease knows what he's doing. But if I'm a Titans fan listening to that and retirement isn't working out for Dean Pease and you know that he wants to be a defensive coordinator, my question would be, like, if you're Mike Vrabel, like, why did you not offer him to be a defensive coordinator? I mean, I think you've reported that they did offer him a position in some capacity. Maybe it was similar to what Jim Schwartz just accepted with the Tennessee Titans. But if you're Mike Vrabel and you know that Dean Pease is interested in coming back to the NFL and interested in returning to be a defensive coordinator, if I'm a Titans fan, I'm asking the question, why in the world did you not offer him the job to be the defensive coordinator again?
Yeah, and I get the question, and I can't answer for Mike Vrabel, and I don't expect Mike Vrabel to fully elaborate in any future press conference, but if I'm Mike Vrabel, I'm like, you know what? I love you, Dean, and if you want to come back and be part of this, great, but you just retired. You've retired twice now. So is this, you go through another grind of a year and now it's back to, okay, life's back to normal. I can actually go to my grandkids' games. I am retiring again. I mean, I think I would want to try to set up something that's a little bit more long-term. Plus, if you bring him back, I think this is secondary, but if you bring him back and make him DC, you are saying, Shane, you're not good enough. You're saying, I was wrong. I messed up with Shane. And you could have Shane Bowen still be your outside linebackers coach, but you're basically now bringing Pease back to, like, save the day. I think there's a lot of reasons to not do it. But the biggest one to me is that. It's Vrabel's had a bunch of attrition at coordinator. It's a good thing on the offensive side of it because, you know, it's LaFleur getting the Packers job. Still amazing 3 years later. I mean, he's done fine with it. But obviously Arthur Smith, hot commodity. You want some continuity there, and how do you feel good about continuity with Dean Pease as your DC right now? How long is he going to be in Atlanta?
Right, but if it doesn't work, how long is Shane Bowen going to be here as a DC now? I mean, I hear what you're saying, and the long-term part of it makes sense, but, like, what's long-term in the NFL? And especially with a defense that was as bad as it was last year, like, what does long-term mean? Because, I mean, if you have a great amount of success as a defensive coordinator, odds are probably going to be a head coach at some point. So, like, long-term, as a defensive coordinator, what is that, 3 years, 4 years? I don't know. I mean, I think that's an interesting part of this. Like, to me, I think of it this way. Like, if you knew Dean Pease was available, you had not even at that point named Shane Bowen the defensive coordinator yet in title, even though, as we've become well aware, he served as the defensive coordinator last year. I don't think it would have been that hard of a sell, at least to the public, say, like, all right, Dean Pease was coming out of retirement. Here he is.
Well, the fans would have celebrated in the streets.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, he just retired. You know, look, here's a question on Dean Pease. If Dean Pease were the DC last year, are they just dramatically better?
I don't know. I mean, we could be about to find out the answer to that question. Was that the defense he's going to in Atlanta? It's pretty bad.
Right. I mean, I would a million times out of a million, I'd rather have Dean Pease as my D coordinator over Shane Bowen or any position coach in the NFL or a lot of other coordinators in the NFL. So I understand, like, why not just take the best person you can right now for the job? But I also understand, like, okay, do we really want to go back to that if he just retired for the second time? Like, I understand the impulse to kind of let's move forward. And look, maybe part of this is some sort of Dean Pease, you know, after a couple of years, didn't enjoy, he maybe got in some conflicts with Vrabel. I don't know. And that's possible. That's possibly part of this, and he doesn't anticipate that happen with Arthur Smith. But the fact that he called Arthur Smith, I mean, that just doesn't surprise me that much.
No.
He kind of made clear last year, again, I know you know, he was on some shows. I know that he talked to Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, kind of making it clear that he was not down with retirement.
Yeah.
You know, so he kind of put it out there. And Vrabel offered him to come back, I guess, I would assume, something like what this Jim Schwartz position is, which I think makes sense. Another thing to remember about Dean Pease, and again, if you do well, you do well, but he did leave the building very early. They were very strict when he was here on, okay, Dean's got to get out of here, go to bed, things like that. Again, the defense was good, so that's not a problem.
Right.
But it's different than – I'm sure there's something to be said for – you know, I'm sure – I mean, Vrabel seems like the type of guy who loves to be up till 2 a.m. ordering pizza and breaking down film
right.
with his coordinators. So, I mean, that they had to kind of adjust things around Pease when he was the coordinator. So it's something to keep in mind.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And when we come back, we'll ask this question. What would we consider to be a success for new Titans offensive coordinator Todd Downing in year one? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. T-Mobile and 102.5 The Game are giving you and three friends the chance to win a stay-and-play experience at Hermitage Golf Course. Be listening in today at 4:15 on Stillman & Company for the keyword to text into the game line at 615-737-1025. You can find more details at the GameNashville.com contest page. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning. Hal Gill going to join us at 9:30. We'll look ahead to the matchup for the Predators tonight against the Detroit Red Wings with him. Right now, talking all things Tennessee Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, we've talked about the expectations a lot for Shane Bowen and the defensive side of the ball, but a lot of pressure on the offensive side as well, with Todd Downing stepping into the offensive coordinator role with his first year with the Titans in that role, and you're taking over for Arthur Smith and an offense that was just outstanding and an elite offense in the NFL last season. You've got Tannehill, you've got A.J. Brown, you've got Derrick Henry. So still three very good pieces to feel good about. Also, the offensive line, other than Dennis Kelly, remains intact as well. So lots still to like on the offensive side of the ball, but also some key departures as well. I mentioned Dennis Kelly, Jonnu Smith now gone as well, Corey Davis gone, Adam Humphries as well. So as you factor in the moves that have been made so far on the offensive side of the ball, and then also factor in just how big of a loss it is to lose Arthur Smith being the play caller, what would you consider to be a success for Todd Downing in his first year as offensive coordinator with the Titans?
Well, if they win and they don't fall completely off the table offensively, then I think it's fine. I mean, you lost Corey Davis, you lost Jonnu Smith, you have uncertainty at right tackle. So I think some level – and Adam Humphries. You know, yep. Adam Humphries didn't play a ton, but when he did, he was a factor. I think some level of regression, not to mention just the fact that anybody who does something really well in this league, usually teams figure some things out and you can't count on Derrick Henry to run for 2K every year. So some level of regression, I think, is fine. It may not be for everybody, and he may be the first person to be blamed if it happens. But, I mean, just don't fall off the map. You should still be one of the best offenses in the NFL when it's all said and done. And you should be able to take advantage of Darrington Evans and have that element in your offense. And someone, you know, came in earlier with a good point that the Titans have been so good in the red zone. That's something that needs to be maintained. That's a huge part of winning or losing football games, if you settle for three or if you get seven when you're in there.
I think the thing that stands out to me about Arthur Smith was the feel that he had for the game. I mean, it was similar, I guess, to Dean Pease, although not anywhere near as experienced as Dean Pease was, but you just felt like they had a good feel to the game. Arthur Smith, I thought, was very good at keeping defenses off balance for the most part. I mean, we talked a lot about the play action part of this and how effective the Titans have been in that area, but knowing when to call certain plays, like in the red zone, whether he's lining up in the wildcat or it's a play action pass over the middle to Firkser, like, I just think there was a good rhythm that Arthur Smith had established and a really good relationship between Tannehill and Arthur Smith as well. Number one, can Todd Downing establish that relationship with Tannehill to the degree that Arthur Smith did? I think that's a good question. I would assume that he could. I mean, Ryan Tannehill seems like a pretty easy dude to get along with, and we all know the quarterback offensive coordinator relationship is an important one. I think that's part of why that you go in-house with this hire, is to try to keep, number one, the system as similar as possible, but number two, people you're comfortable with in that offense. But comfort's great and all that's good, but if you don't have a good feel for when to call plays, you're not going to be as effective as an offense. That's the number one thing I'm looking for out of Todd Downing, is does he have at least a similar feel of how to use the weapons in this offense? Look, I think expecting him to come in and be every bit as good as Arthur Smith was, probably not going to happen. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But my guess would be probably not going to happen. But is it similar enough where you still got a pretty good offense and you can still win games and be very effective in the red zone, to your point?
Yeah, I mean, according to Raiders fans, he never called a good play. We're still waiting for the first good play call of his career. So, I mean, look, if you're Todd Downing, this is your chance to, you know, to prove yourself again, to bounce back from that 4 years after the fact, get another shot. It's a pretty sweet deal, really. You got Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown, that offensive line. I mean, a lot of OCs in this league would love to have that material to work with. It's not like he's getting a chance to like coordinate some downtrodden team's bad offense and turn it around. I mean, just take this and do a lot of the same things. You're going to run outside zone all the time. You're going to make your play action passes look like outside zone. And, you know, you got people who can play at a high level. So it's a good situation. It is also a lot of pressure because the guy who preceded you was just really good and had a really good feel for it.
Christopher on Periscope asks, do you think the loss of Davis and Janu dampens the expectations of the offense?
I think a little bit, but also we haven't seen who they're going to draft.
Right.
I mean, I think they're going to draft a tight end at a prominent spot. I think they're going to draft a receiver at a prominent spot. They've signed Josh Reynolds. You know, I mean, I think after the draft, there should be a pretty good on-paper collection of talent with, I think, still some questions at tight end because they don't have an obvious number one tight end.
Yeah, that to me is interesting. And you brought this up. Like, it's going to be interesting to see what sort of priority they place on tight end in this draft, because I still think as valuable as Firkser is and as good as I think he can be in the passing game, I still think you need somebody else there. And right now, I guess, like, your in-line tight end, Jeff Swaim, I guess, as the in-line blocking tight end, that's fine. I mean, Jeff Swaim doesn't bring much to the table in the passing game either. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. I mean, we've had some different names thrown out there. I mean, you know, there's Trimble from Notre Dame that's out there that could be available for the Titans. Maybe that's the route they go. I think a lot of people feel like that could be a good fit for them in the draft. But as you start to look at the needs, I mean, we've talked about edge rusher. We've talked about receiver. Obviously, they're going to have to draft a corner along the way as well. I mean, you've got to draft a tight end, in my opinion, somewhere in the top 100. Like, that's got to be a part of the plan if you're John Robinson and the Titans.
Yeah. I mean, Hunter Long from Boston College makes sense. I mean, certainly, like, Vrabel, I'm sure, has a pretty good feel for, you know, what kind of player he is, but also kind of person he's considering, like, his kid plays with him at Boston College. So he's an intriguing talent. I'm a big fan of Pat Freiermuth of Penn State. A bigger fan of him than Ryan Porth is.
Yes.
Based on earlier discussions. I think he's the type of guy who could fit perfectly and can do everything well. But that is, I still think, gosh, someone brought up yesterday on one of my articles in The Athletic in the comments, like, what if Dennis Kelly's sitting there and no one signs him? Like, could the Titan, you know, would the Titans at some point just be able to just pick him up at way less than they were going to pay him this year? Would he go for that?
I had his goodbye letter the other day.
He did. And then Michael Pruitt is I just think Michael Pruitt's a real nice tight end. I mean, I don't know that there's a huge difference between Michael Pruitt and Jeff Swaim, but I think he's a little bit more of a receiving threat than Swaim is. If no one picks him up, does he eventually get added? There's some other guys on the roster. Someone brought up Jared Pinkney earlier from Vanderbilt. You know, they've signed him. So there are some options. It's just not an obvious one.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. JD texts in and says, typical Titans, let one of the greatest defensive minds in the history of the game get away from your organization because your cynic of a coach can't get his ego out of the way to allow someone to help him. All the while, a soft general manager allows it to happen and spends money on some aged and often injured defensive free agents. You stay classy, Titans.
Dang.
JD is not a fan of what's going on with the Titans on the defensive side of the ball.
That is the opposite of sunshine blowing.
It is. JD. That's a grade A doom and gloomer right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, Bud Dupree is not old. So just to,
how old
just
is he,
to
28?
Be clear, yeah.
Although Ben on our text line can be pretty doom and gloomy. I mean, Ben on the text line has been trashing John Robinson and Mike Vrabel for the last 3 months.
Yes, and charting Rex Rhodes and Stillman's picks.
Is that the same Ben?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Speaking of Ben, he asked on the text line.
Ben has been busy.
That's right. He asked on the text line, when Henry gets stuffed, if Tannehill wasn't to blame for offensive playoff failures, then was it Arthur Smith?
Well, I don't think Arthur Smith had a good day against the Ravens.
No. Well, I don't think Ryan Tannehill did either.
I don't think many people had good days.
Yeah, I don't think there was very many days all around that were good against the Ravens.
That's the thing. That side of the ball, as good as they were last year, at the most important moment, you weren't good.
Yeah.
So there's still something to prove for those guys, too. And I don't know. No, nothing means more than what you do in the postseason. So I would say Tannehill didn't have his best day. He's got to be better than that. I would say Arthur Smith didn't have his best day. If anyone wants to say Arthur Smith had one eye out the door and was worried about this and that, I mean, you know, hey, it's going to be brought up when you're about to leave. I mean, I can't imagine that he sat there that week and, you know,
like watching Trevor Lawrence tape.
Yeah, like sat there that week and was like, yeah, we're fine. We know the Ravens. I don't need a game plan this. But
he actually talked about that on the podcast with Bustin' with the Boys.
Talked about?
About the fact that he interviewed the night of the playoff game.
What'd you say?
He wishes he wouldn't have done that for the interview. Like, he was so glued into the playoff game that he felt like he was just kind of walking into something unprepared with the interview.
So he regretted it from his own job perspective, not from the Titans' performance perspective.
That's what it came across as.
Thanks a lot,
Arthur. Because he's so locked in, man.
Right. So, in other words, per Arthur Smith, he was locked in, as you would hope, for a play. I mean,
he wished
would tend to believe him. You know,
he wished the rules were different, that wasn't
I can see that.
Capable of happening.
Yeah. A possibility,
right.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Because it looks bad if you have a bad day at the office.
But they were trying to squeeze in. They were planning on winning that game, obviously. So he was trying to squeeze in a handful of interviews between Sunday night and that Monday, so that he could get to work on the next playoff game after that.
And then all of a sudden he had plenty of time to pick his next team. That's a pretty – look, the peas thing, people are going to be mad about it, and I get it. But I think you have to look at it from the perspective of, are you going to keep bringing him back, retire, come back, retire? I think moving forward is not a bad thing all the time.
And make sure you stay tuned today for Darren Donick and Chase. At 12 o'clock, they'll have former Titans defensive line coach Jim Washburn, which is always entertaining. You're going to want to make sure that you stay tuned for that. When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. Preds radio analyst Hal Gill will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This hour of Robbie and Rex Road is brought to you by Trane. Get a great deal this spring on a new Trane heating and cooling system. At Trane, they test so it runs. Visit traneinfo.com to find your local dealer and learn more. It's hard to stop a Trane.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Nashville Predators taking on the Detroit Red Wings tonight. Puck drop at 6:30, pregame at 5:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Preds radio analyst Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Bellmead, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How you doing?
We are doing great. Wonderful. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Hal, I've got to start from that game the other night with Roman Josi because he was ridiculous. He was all, I mean, just everywhere over the ice. He could have scored two or three goals. He has the two assists. He has the goal in the shootout as well. I think sometimes we probably take for granted what we're watching out there with Roman Josi, but I thought he was absolutely dominant in that game on Tuesday night against Detroit.
He was. Part of that scares me because I'm looking at it going, oh, no, this is the old Preds where they couldn't get anything going, but Roman Josi was trying to do everything and was just dominating. And so that part scares me a little bit. I'd like to see there was a little bit of separation between the forwards and the D at certain times. And that I think Josi was like, all right, I'll just go ahead and do everything. And so I think that was only a 10-minute span. And that's when Josi really stepped up. But, yeah, he is – what a treat it is to watch him every night, isn't it? I mean, like, he is just unreal. The way he can push through forwards and then push through the D the same way, he had a couple great scoring chances, one that was post-to-post and didn't go in. And then, of course, a beautiful finish in the shootout. He is legit, isn't he? Just unreal to watch.
Yeah, I think it was you in the post. I love that in the post. I think it was the post game. You were like, oh, God, come on, Josi. What are you not finishing this thing?
Yeah, come
like,
on.
Like, gee,
yeah.
Just skating through the whole team, you know? Like, who does that?
You just beat five guys. You can't beat the last one.
Yeah. Come on. So you mentioned the old Preds, you know, Josi, maybe, I don't know, is it like trying to do too much earlier this season because just things weren't going well offensively? Is it? Do you feel like it's sort of like he's got the feel for like picking his spots now and not overextending himself?
Well, if you want to get technical, let's get technical with it because
yeah.
it is interesting. If you look at the way that the Preds have played, you have Roman Josi, Matias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, even it started with PK Subban. You had such a great defensive squad that forwards would say, hey, I'll just stretch out and you guys break it out and get it to me. And I'll hang out here. And that was the way that things went. And I think when the team's going well, it's great. But when they start to struggle, then all of a sudden you say, hey, we need our forwards to get back and help defensively. But they weren't there. And it was just something that's creeped into the team with the way Laviolette was playing and, you're playing man-on-man defense and it kind of got away from him. And so I think what happened is, Hines came in and restructured the way that D-zone was played and went to a hybrid zone and kind of figured it out. The big step for me was that Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi were out of the lineup and everyone said, uh-oh, we got to get back. We really need to play a five-man defensive unit, and they did that. And they had success with those guys out of the lineup because they played as a team. And defensively, they weren't looking at, two defensemen to play defense. It was everyone involved. And so as that went on, they started to have that successful road swing. Now you bring Roman Josi back in the lineup, and you interject him into a solid defensive structure. And that's where all the success has come from. When they fall out of that structure, Josi's there to break it out and do it himself. But I don't think you should rely on him. I think the team needs to reel it in and play the way they were with him out of the lineup and then let him do all his great things, but you don't need him to do all those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
yeah.
It makes perfect sense. Hal Gill on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Hal, I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. I mean, it's almost become comical at this point, the amount of injuries that they continue to sustain on seemingly a game-by-game basis. And we had John Hines on earlier. He says it looks like Arvidsson could play tonight and Cunnan as well, but Fabbro will not. Number one, what do you think of the rash of injuries that continues to happen to this group? And number two, I mean, we're not that far away from you having to suit up. Like, what do you still have left in the tank at this point?
I don't know. I don't know how much I could give you. I could give you maybe 5 minutes, and then you'd see a significant tail off in my game after that. it's crazy, the injuries. And, you look around the whole the NHL is all dealing with different injuries, and it's been a tough year, I think, just the way everything is structured. What impresses me about all these injuries is I was looking through the lineup, and I was like, you know, of course, Forsberg, Ellis, Duchesne, you know, you're going through all these injuries, and Arvidsson out. And then what amazed me is I looked at Carrier, and I was like, ah, I can't believe Carrier's out. And I never would have said that in the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
That would never have crossed my mind. Like, we need Carrier back in the lineup. This guy is awesome. And so with all these injuries, I think David Poile and John Hines, like, everyone's getting to see this young talent. And you got to, you know, Tolvanen has stepped up and been not just scoring goals, but hitting and blocking shots. I mean, this guy has been awesome for the Preds. So, I think with all those injuries, you're seeing a different team. And they talked about changing the mentality earlier in the season, and they went out and signed guys that were going to change their makeup. And now you're seeing it in action. And youthful exuberance and all this excitement that these guys are playing with right now is because of those young guys. So, you know, the injuries, although they stink, they've changed the way they're playing their game. And so now I look at it, and I imagine David Poile is doing it too, going, all right, I have a pretty good team, and I'm going to get healthy at some point, or I hope so, and now I'm going to add these guys into a pretty good team. It's almost like picking up, you could look through and say, we'll pick up five guys at the trade deadline, and we won't have to give up anything. And I like our chances with that. And so that's the exciting part about all these injuries is hopefully these guys are healthy, and hopefully the team plays the same way with those healthy guys in the lineup. And then, I don't see it. We'll find out more about Tampa. But Florida, Carolina, those are beatable teams, especially with a stacked lineup that's playing really well.
Well, also earlier, how John Hines said, you know, if you looked at it like a pie, like the biggest piece of this turnaround is the veterans, I guess, kind of seeing how the young guys are playing. You just mentioned youthful exuberance, and then kind of realizing like they had to keep up, I guess, or to adjust and take it to another level. How much of that have you seen watching this team every night?
Well, I think I see it all the time. I mean, like, you can't, and I remember, I'll go back to when I was an old fart playing with the young kids and trying to keep up with them. I used to love it when I'd see a kid go out and overachieve, and you say, oh, that kid's more than I thought he was. And you're looking at Tolvanen do that. Saros has played unreal, and I think he's having some excitement seeing Tolvanen, and it kind of trickles down through the lineup. And then you look at everyone else. Of course, Pex, Josi, it's got to be a lot of fun. I know Forsberg kind of built, I mean, how fun is that to go out and play on a power play where you can throw a seam pass and know the guy's going to go top shelf with it? And Forsberg had that playing with Tolvanen, and how much fun does that make the game? You look through, I still think there needs to be more from Johansson. I feel like if he could get moving forward a little bit quicker and play with the speed that we've seen him play with spurts, I think this team could be deadly because he's that big centerman that they need right now. You throw Gromlin in, who's been consistent. All these guys have something to give, and if you put it all together, the combination of the veteran leadership and the youthful excitement, I think is going to be a good mix, especially in the playoffs when you need a balance of both, right? I mean, that's when, you know, and I say playoffs, I mean now, because it is a fight for the playoffs. You know, you're fighting just to get in, and the playoffs have become an extension of that fight. And so I think they're in a good place right now where they have a good balance.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Bellmead, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with 5-star service. Hal, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Absolutely.
Hey, Hal, one question real fast. Would you like to see Ryan Johansson go faster on shootout tries?
How crazy was that? Right? You know what's awesome is, is, you know, there's certain players in the league that you go down there, you make your move, and Grice took it away. I mean, he stopped the move, right? And a lot of players would have just said, I'm just going to, you know, I made my move, I'll just jam it and try to squeeze it in. And Joey just completely went heartless and just slowed down his pulse and then flipped it up and over. I mean, that's a skilled player's move. That's what excites me about Johansson. If you have that size with that puck control and patience, that's something special. It was fun to watch, and his reaction after that was even better. Just looking around like, oh, I kind of got away with one. My move didn't work, but somehow I made it happen. That was something awesome.
It was awesome. Appreciate you, Hal, for taking time to join us.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's right. Preds Radio analyst Hal Gill, presented by Duncan and by TriStar Movers. When we come back, we'll revisit our poll question of the day surrounding UC Soros and the future of the Predators' goaltending position. Also, our Masters update as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thanks to Hal Gill for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Regarding UC Soros and the future of the goaltending position for the Predators, Soros has been on a hot streak as of late, .960 save percentage in his last 12 games. So big picture, how do you view Soros as the Preds goalie? Do you think he's the franchise goalie, the bridge starter to Askarov, who they just selected in the first round in last year's draft, or an average goalie who right now is just riding a hot streak? Right now, 57% of the vote say Soros is the bridge starter to Askarov, 26% say an average goalie who's on a hot streak, and 17% that Soros is the franchise goaltender moving forward. Your reaction to those percentages?
So 83% don't think he's a franchise goaltender, and this poll is submitted when he's in the best stretch of his career.
That is correct.
When he is nightly screaming to people, are you sure I'm not the franchise goaltender? I'm not saying I think he is either, but it's interesting that that's still 83-17. And I figured that the bridge option would win. So, you know what? It's like this team, or it could be like this team. Sports, man, they are – sports, not predictable when we think it is a lot of times. I never would have guessed we'd be talking about this team in some playoff run and, you know, they're missing half their team and they're still winning, and here they are. So it's not like it's impossible for Soros to be something for 4 years and all of a sudden figure out how to be something else from year five and beyond. It's possible. At this point, I would, you know, I would think that that's probably – what he will be is a bridge to Askarov, who has obviously a high ceiling, but lots of players in this league and in any league aren't what they're cracked up to be when they're young and they're sort of like the unknown is undefeated. And sometimes, you know, players who are veterans actually improve and figure something out and get better.
And I will give Soros credit. I mean, there was a time a month ago, if you would have asked me this question, I wasn't convinced that he was even the bridge guy. Like, I thought there had been too much inconsistency in his game, and he had struggled to begin this year. And I said it here on the show, like, I'm not convinced that he's even the bridge guy as you move forward. I think the way he's played as of late, while still recognizing that this save percentage is going to come down. I mean, he's not going to sit here at a .960 save percentage forever. Otherwise, he's absolutely the franchise goaltender, and you can go on and plan a few cup parades as well. But it's going to come down at some point. I think he's played well enough over a long enough stretch of time now where you look at the other options that could be out there as a bridge goaltender, he's the best option. And I think, you know, it's interesting. We talked about his contract earlier. He's making $1.5 million per year. He's a restricted free agent this offseason. My guess is that's going to go up pretty significantly. My guess would be somewhere around $3.5-4 million. I don't know that. That's just a guess that I have. And I'd probably do a 3-year deal. I think 3-year deal could be beneficial for both sides.
I feel like $3.5 million. $4 million for him, that's still a good deal for the club, right?
I think so as well. Ryan Porth, it is time for our Masters T-Mobile 5G leaderboard update brought to you by T-Mobile, America's largest and fastest 5G network. The Masters underway today, Ryan Porth. I know this brings you great joy.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
Can't wait to watch the Masters later today.
And when I watch, maybe Abraham Answer is still in the lead because he's in the lead right now at 2 under.
Maybe so.
Through 4 holes. He's had a good answer through 4 holes.
Wow. Fourth even incorporating a dad joke into the Masters update.
Always. We have 6 golfers at 1 under par early on in their rounds. And then former champions, owners of a green jacket, Dustin Johnson.
Yes.
And Sergio Garcia, both at 1 over.
Yes.
Early on in their rounds. And still a whole lot of golf to be played at Augusta later today.
There is. You're absolutely right.
That is your Masters. T-Mobile 5G leaderboard update brought to you by T-Mobile, America's largest and fastest 5G network.
Well done, Ryan Forth.
Abraham Answer?
Apparently.
All name team.
Yes. I've got money on him.
Do you?
Do you?
Yeah. For like a top 20 finish.
Is there a golfer that you don't have money on?
I think a couple.
Spread that money around.
Who do you think is going to win? Who's your prediction?
All right. So my pick is John Rahm.
Okay.
John Rahm is due to win the Masters. John Rahm is very, very good. But okay. My sleeper, who I have also winning but also finishing in the top 10, is Cameron Smith. Cameron Smith, I think, was either second or third last year at the Masters when Dustin Johnson just blew everybody away.
Yeah.
He was right there. He had a very good round. So,
okay.
All right. Hey, real quick before we go, who texted about Conway Twitty earlier?
I don't remember.
Well, anyway, Conway Twitty, 1982, Slow Hand, was actually a cover of the Pointer Sisters 1981 hit, Slow Hand. Did not know that until that was brought up, but put some respect on the Pointer Sisters' name.
That's right. Let's quickly go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texted in, "My mom thinks golf voices are so cute. She's listening to Porth." There you go.
How many ladders does Heidi's mom have?
That's, I don't know.
So Heidi's mom thinks I have a cute voice.
That is correct.
All right.
Well, your golf voice, not your normal one.
I'll take it as the normal voice.
Okay. All right. That's good. It's a 2-star voice from Ryan Porth in there.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt 2-star recruits. Yes.
Well done today, Ryan.
I can't believe cannot believe I did that.
It was an excellent job by you.
Didn't catch it.
Like Bartolo Colon, you had a solid outing.
That's right. We'll be back tomorrow here on Robbie and Rex Road, 6 a.m. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.